is a football fans podcast and the people behind CelticUnderground.net, and it's a review of the last 10 years. The review of 2010 to 2019, the Celtic decade.
Celtic fancy a fifth. Mikael Lustig certainly does. What a tidy finish. A pulsating performance from Celtic. They have well and truly put Rangers in their place.
What's the goalie doing, Tom? What's the goalie doing?
But as far as I'm concerned, the first thing he can do for me is to chuck all your medals and all your caps and all your pots and all your pans into the biggest flipping dustbin you can find, because you've never won any of them fairly. You've done it all by blooming cheating.
I just sat still with a coffee. The week's gone, that's it. Right, the bottom line is, the big house must stay open. That's the bottom line.
So, I promised at the end of the last podcast we would do a decade review of the 2010-2020 era, and I thought I'd get two guys with better memories than me to do that. So I'm joined by Robert and Alan. How are you guys doing?
Very good, Harry. Nice to be here.
So what I thought we'd do is, rather than just go, so 2010 this happened, 2011, I thought I'd try and pick, colour the decade with 10 key moments of the decade that created a memorable period in Celtic's history. And then what I thought we'd do after this podcast, if people want to email into podcast@celticunderground.net, that's podcast with a plural, or they can contact on Twitter, Harry Brady CU, with either voting in order for the ones that we come up with here, or if you come up with your own. So that's what we're going to do. So we'll start, the decade started with Tony Mowbray as the Celtic manager, which was wasn't going well, and I'll make the first nomination for my 10 moments that shaped the decade for Celtic. Actually, I'll go with Celtic losing 4-0 to St Mirren, because I think that changed a lot of the thinking of the club and put us on the route to 10 in a row. Well, the thing I remember vividly about that is my boy, who will be 10 this March, he was not long out of hospital, had colic, and I can't remember what channel the game was on. I was watching it on a badge stream. There was a badge stream with a couple of weeks old baby with colic on my knee who wouldn't stop crying, and Celtic losing 4 goals. So I have a particularly strong memory of that bad moment. So Robert, I'll go on to you. Let you start with your 10 moments, 10 incidents, 10 things that shaped the decade.
Well, I also had the St Mirren defeat that you've just referred to as part of my 10. And as you say, we started with Tony Mowbray and we've finished the decade, and it's been, I like a few stats here and there, but you know, it has been the most successful decade in Celtic's history. We've won 18 out of the 30 domestic trophies available to us. Could have been a bit more if you were being greedy. But none of this would have been possible if we hadn't fired Tony Mowbray in I think it was about the beginning of March 2010. And, you know, I thought that in the Martin O'Neill and Gordon Strachan era, we'd won a lot of trophies. We'd developed a winning mentality. You know, we were playing against, you know, EBT Rangers teams and pretty strong Rangers teams, you know, after the turn of the millennium. And I think that winning mentality disappeared within 6 months of Mowbray's arrival. So I think the board maybe a curious decision to give Mowbray the job in the first place, but at least decisive enough to make the change quickly. Quite a brave decision, I think, to put Lennon in on a temporary basis at that time. But as I recall, he won 8 out of 9, lost to Ross County in the Scottish Cup semi-final, got the job, and, you know, we've kicked on, and as I say, we've ended the decade, you know, in a remarkable period of dominance. And even in the 60s and 70s, you know, we didn't win the amount of domestic trophies that we've just won.
Well, you talk about I think the decision to appoint Mowbray was on the back of fans thinking that it was pragmatic football under Strachan and a bit boring. And I think it was okay, we're going to go with a manager whose teams have been getting a reputation for playing with a bit of flair. I think that was the thought process. It just never worked. But you're right, 24th of March, we lose to St Mirren 4-0. So my boy was 2 weeks old, exactly. And then we beat Kilmarnock 3-1, beat Hibs 1-0, beat Motherwell 2-1, beat Hibs 3-2, beat Dundee United 2-0, beat Motherwell 4-0, beat Rangers 2-1, beat Hearts 2-1. That was the remaining league games of the season under Lennon with that. So, it was a pivotal moment in changing things at Celtic.
And I think, if you recall, that, you know, the first transfer window of the decade was absolute chaos because, you know, stalwarts of Strachan's team like Stephen McManus, Scott McDonald, Barry Robson, Caldwell, they were all flogged off. And we, you know, apart from Robbie Keane, we brought in 8 or 9 players on loan deals who, you know, were instantly forgettable. And it was chaotic. And as I say, I think it was, you know, the defining moment of the decade actually was to remove Mowbray quickly and get back to, you know, having Celtic managers that knew how to win. I think a lot of mistakes were made with Mowbray, and I think some of those mistakes were repeated under Ronnie Dyla, but we got away with it in that particular case.
So,
Alan, any thoughts on that?
Yeah.
One? No.
Well, yeah, and unlike Robert, I've got no ability to remember things sequentially or with any degree of detail. I just generally remember times when we really got it up the Huns. And I think it was the same season. That was the season when was that the season when Samaras beat Rangers 2-0 at Ibrox? That was 2011, right?
Yeah,
that was Lennon was the manager.
Yeah.
I mean, I just remember then we hadn't won it. You're talking about Lennon knowing how to win matches, right? We hadn't won at Ibrox for 2-3 seasons, I think, since 2008. And I mean, I was one of, I think, many who you know, wasn't massively convinced by Samaras. And I just always remember that game, Samaras being brilliant and scoring his 2 goals. And it also been a turning point for a lot of people, for Charlie Mulgrew, who again I hadn't been convinced about. But I remember Mulgrew just being immense at Ibrox. It was the game where it was the 40th anniversary of the Ibrox disaster, and there had been the usual sort of lead up as to how all the Celtic fans were going to boo. And I remember Big Billy and John Gregg leading the teams out, and then a minute silence being impeccably observed. And then as humping, it was a Paddy McCourt era. I remember always enjoying Paddy McCourt on the pitch at Ibrox, and it was just a great day. I mean, it was the period we've got used to winning at Ibrox since then, right? We got used to big wins over them, but you know they weren't so common or so easily. You'll know this, Robert. I seem to remember them hitting the bar early on, actually, and then it just turned out to be a great day.
Yes.
Yeah, 2nd of January 2011. But you're right, which is part of the reason why so many Celtic fans were annoyed with about 10 of the 800 Rangers fans applauding for the minute's applause at Celtic Park this new year, because every single time there's been a minute's silence due at Ibrox, there's been build up social media, the Rangers fans have been talking about the Celtic fans will do this, the Celtic fans will do that, and every time it's impeccably observed. But
as they should be.
But that's because at least you can do, regardless of what you think of people, is be respectful for the dead.
One other thing I want to say about that season is that it was a season at the end of which Lennon had been getting all kinds of abuse, and it was a season when they interviewed him on the on the pitch at Celtic Park after we'd won the league, and he came out with that statement when they intro asked him how he felt about everything, and he said how he felt about the fans, usual question, and he said this isn't the end, this is just the beginning. And as I suspect we're going to cover shortly, season 2011-12 brought a happy event, which meant those were really prescient words, actually, because we have just got on to, I don't think that's what Neil had in mind at the time, but the most amazing period of dominance. But yeah, it was that time when Lennon had been under all sorts of pressure, and there was a massive release at the end of that season. It was fantastic.
I think Lenny showed when he was with Hibs that he knew how to win at Ibrox as well, because he won, I think, both times that Hibs played there under his stewardship. And he also had his incredible celebration on the touchline when they won one of those games at Ibrox. So the,
So that season, Celtic finished second. I was Lennon's first European thing, where he got beaten 3-0 away at Braga, and then beaten 4-0 by Utrecht away in his two first European away games. So he's also learned how to be a bit more pragmatic in Europe since then.
Not half.
Yes.
Based on this season.
Exactly. So there's two moments. There's the St Mirren 4-0 defeat and 2-0 at Ibrox. Robert, what probably, as Alan said, he and I are not so great at chronological, so you'll probably have to correct us in terms of getting things in order as we go through. So, Alan, I'll let you go with a second event in the decade.
Well, sort of, I do know chronologically, 2012 came after 2011, I seem to remember Valentine's Day 2012 being more memorable than most of my Valentine's Days, Harry. I mean, I know we
you
like.
You should go to Bangkok for Valentine's Day. I hear Bangkok's an excellent place to go.
Yes, well, one of our colleagues is checking that out this weekend, as discussed earlier. But we'll let him do the research. Yeah, I mean, I know we like to talk about Celtic and we like to say it's not all about Rangers, but I think it was, for me anyway, that the tragic end of Rangers Football Club in 2012 was obviously a very sad affair for all of us in Scottish football, the tragic end of the old firm.
I think for every Celtic supporter, Rangers going bust is your JFK moment. You remember. So, Alan, where were you? How did you find out? What were you doing?
I found out happily. I was in Hong Kong, and I found out from my dad on the phone. It must have been, which is extraordinary, actually, because he's now 91, and he's not exactly. In fact, Robert's much more impressive with these technological skills than my dad is. But my dad, I guess that one came out in the UK. So I had him on the phone, and I just remember. Sort of wild scenes of hilarity and celebration. I'm sure we probably spoke, Robert, although I can't actually remember. Where were you?
I think I was in Singapore, and yeah, I couldn't believe that it had actually happened. There'd been rumours for a long time that Rangers were in trouble. Their last ditch attempt to sign Daniel Kuzan during the window, where apparently he wouldn't leave Glasgow Airport unless somebody gave him 50,000 quid in cash, and he got back on a plane and didn't sign. So there was a lot of stuff floating about. I mean, speaking of Valentine's Day, I understand that is the release date for Craig White's book about Rangers month. And I mean, that's probably going to be a must read for all Celtic fans, is to read Craig White's version of events. But
do you know, I remember speaking to a friend of mine who's a Rangers fan and was on the Rangers Supporters Trust prior to them going bust. And I remember saying to him, slightly shortly after the event, saying, why were the Trust not geared up for this event? Why were you not ready to immediately step in the moment Rangers got into financial difficulties? And he said, because we didn't know it was coming. And the thing that I always found odd about that was, I like my cricket, he likes his cricket, we go to the cricket, right, once a year we'll go to... And I can remember, we were at Old Trafford in the summer before Rangers went bust. And Lennon had obviously finished second the season before. And I remember him saying it, my brother and I, how do you think the Celtic fans will be, Lennon obviously being a hero, but how do you think they'll be with him if you don't win the league again this year? And my brother and I, straight away without thinking, said, well, that won't be a problem because you guys will be going bust. And so we just knew they were going to go into administration at some point in the season. Didn't know they would actually go completely out of business, but we knew they would go into administration early in the season, you know, in the summer. We knew it was going to happen, and yet he said they didn't know. The thing for me, I can remember being in a meeting and my phone was on silent, but it was still on vibrate, and I was in a meeting and my phone was in my case. And I just can remember for about 5 minutes, my phone just going the whole way through. And I was sitting there thinking, because there was rumours that it was going to happen. And I remember just thinking, that's them gone. They've gone. And trying to wind up the meeting so I could get to my phone to go and have a look at it.
Yes, if there had been as much notice of Lehman Brothers going bust in 2008, the world might have turned out differently for a few years. But the thing I remember about Rangers going bust, and when they first came to Parkhead after the administration event, I think it was a game we beat them 3-0 at Parkhead, and Charlie Mulgrew scored with a diving header. But that was the day of the banner of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And I'm trying to remember who the Four Horsemen were. I think it was Craig White, Neil Lennon, Hector, the tax inspector. I can't remember who the fourth one was, actually, but it was a fantastic banner. It was,
I'm desperately trying to look it up to see who was on the banner. Was David Murray maybe not one of them? Hold on,
you know, they hadn't yet assigned any blame to Murray at that, or even we hadn't assigned enough blame to Murray.
No, there was Lennon.
The main culprit in all this.
There was Lennon, Hector, White, and just Death. Death, did you say the other one?
Yeah, that's what it was, the Grim Reaper.
The Grim Reaper, yes.
Indeed.
I remember saying to my my dad, not on that call, but you know, as a few of the more facts came out, and it was, you know, it was totally apparent that this was, and their reaction to it, and you know, it's totally apparent it was going to haunt them, and you know, it wasn't going to, a problem that's going to be solved quickly. I remember saying to my dad, you know, this is going to be the gift that keeps on giving, and he quoted that to me for years that followed, probably 200 times, you know, because I mean the beauty of it was the sheer pantomime that then followed, right? You know, the from Craig White to, you know, the various steps by the Walter Smith Consortium and Charles Green and, you know, the whole alley and shares and John Brown howling in the steps. I mean, there was just so much that went on. It's we must never forget.
Do you know, I was actually just thinking in terms of things that defined the Celtic season. You could actually do them with just Rangers stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Because I know this. I know obviously the point you're making, Alan. This is a Celtic podcast, and we want to talk about Celtic. But the thing about it is, they were our biggest rivals for 100 years. They were the team that, for the bulk of the 100 years, if we didn't win the title, it was because they stopped us.
Right.
And so we're then going out of business. That is for me, that is a major. That is a major thing in our history, then going bust.
Well, yeah, when they won the league the year before, and they got, I mean, at the starting point, they got the points deduction, right? So yeah, in purely footballing terms, it was you know, a hugely relevant fact before the pantomime started.
I remember at the time, Eddie and I doing quite a lot of podcasts at the time about, it was just so funny because, as you say, Alan, there was just more stuff coming out all the time about them. And oh, it was just, I remember, you know, talking about the stuff, you know, stuff in the, I mean, obviously Sandy Jardine at the time was a bit of a spokesman for them, and I remember we were talking about Sandy Jardine running out and stuffing pieces of paper in the boot of the car in the boot of the Saab, so nobody would notice what they were up to. It was a great time to be doing the podcast because you could just take the piss out of them, and it was just brilliant.
Well, it was like when it was like when Trump got elected and the South Park guys said, we're basically stopping now because we can't satirise it, we can't make stuff up because reality is more ridiculous than anything we could pick up. And that was, you know, that was us in the Huns from 2012 to about 2015, right? You couldn't make it up.
There's a bit, I mean, I remember one of the things, and I always tried to find the clip on YouTube and I could never find it to post it up. There's a bit in the film The Devil's Advocate, which is Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino, where Keanu Reeves is like an honest lawyer who starts to go bad type thing, and he walks into this bit of the company that they're supposed to be doing honest stuff for, and they're busy shredding pieces of paper and setting fire to pieces of paper, and that was always my image of what was going on in Ibrox at the time. Every single piece of paper they could, they were shredding it. Remember Alistair Johnson's famous, there's a £9,000 gorilla in the corner of the room or something like that.
Well, you know, they got their just desserts for, you know, at least two decades of excess, you know, where they outspent us and the hubris and, you know, the cheating, you know, they deserved everything that happened to them, in my view. And, you know, it's taken them a long time to recover, quite frankly.
So we've jumped to 2012. Robert, have we missed anything out in that intervening period?
Well, my second pick was from that season, but much earlier in the season. So Lennon's second full season in charge. So I picked a time at the end of October 2011, a game at Rugby Park. And so Rangers had won three in a row titles, and they were about 12 points ahead of us at the end of October, and we were 3-0 down at Killie, either at half-time or shortly after half-time. And this could have been Lennon's Mowbray moment, given, you know, that Tony Mowbray had been dealt with 18 months earlier. And, you know, we put in a tremendous second-half performance. I think Neil Lennon himself has attributed James Forrest to maybe being the player that saved his job. Forrest turned in a fantastic second half. I think it was Anthony Stokes that got the goals. But we fought back for a 3-3. Might have won it, as I recall. And then we went on a 17-game winning streak, which gave us the first of the eight titles. So I thought it was a key moment, because I think if we'd lost that game badly, if the board had panicked and removed Neil Lennon from his position, again, things might have turned out rather different from what they have. And so I thought it was a key fixture, and, you know, one that started to turn the tide in our favour, and I think gave the players confidence. And I can barely remember, in all my years of supporting Celtic, us coming back from three goals down. I mean, I remember a Drybrough Cup final in the early 70s against Hibs when we were three down and came back. But it's not something that happens very often, is getting a result when you're 3-0 down with, you know, less than half an hour to go.
My random memory of that game, and I'm pretty sure it was that game, was when either the first, I think when the first goal went in for us or the second goal, I remember Charlie going and getting the ball out the net. You know, it was real school playground stuff. You know, when you're behind and you score, Mulgrew getting the ball out the net and grabbing it and sprinting back to the halfway line and putting it down to kick off.
do you know the thing I remember about that game was I was actually out. I'd promised my wife I would take her out for lunch. And we went in for lunch just before we were about to, you know, that way you organise something well in advance and then there's a Celtic game moved to a lunchtime kickoff and you think, oh, that's a problem. And it was moved to lunchtime and just before we started ordering our food, it was 3-0. And I thought, and I thought to myself, well, because I was thinking of Mowbray getting fired at 4-0. And I thought to myself, well, the only decent thing here is this might go on to 4 or 5, so the only decent thing about this is it might be a quick sharp shock for changing Neil Lennon and we're doing it early in the season, and I genuinely expected us to have a new manager within a week, and then when I came out it was 3-3. it was amazing. So that was so that's another sort of pivotal moment in terms of how things might have been very different if we hadn't retained Lennon at that point. So what's your next one after that, Robert?
My next one's about a year later, and Spartak Moscow away in the Champions League, and we'd never won away in the Champions League in God knows how many attempts under Martin O'Neill and Gordon Strachan. And, this was Lenny's first attempt at the group stages. We had Barcelona in the group, of which more later, no doubt. And but we'd started the group with a 0-0 draw at home to Benfica in what should have been a winnable match. I thought Moscow was a winnable match. They had Aidan McGeady playing for them that night. And we fought back from we were 2-1 down, I think, with about 20-odd minutes to go. I think they were a man down as well. And we scored. And then the very last minute, Ezaguirre chipped one in and Big Samaras rose as only he can and planked his head on the corner. And I thought Samaras was a great player for us in Europe. And, I mean, that result broke a glass ceiling for us, but it didn't really... I mean, we reverted back to the norm pretty quickly in terms of away performances in the Champions League. And I think the only other one we've had since then was Anderlecht away under Brendan Rodgers. But I picked it because I think the euphoria I felt at the time of winning away in a Champions League group stage was, you know, was something that sat with me for quite a long time, you know, and it, as I'm sure we're about to discuss, that group turned out to be, a great outcome for us that year. And, you know, the Moscow result proved to be very significant. It was a catalyst, I think, for our success in the Champions League that year.
And you were going to have it in your list as well, Alan?
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, Robert's put it all very, very articulately. I mean, I must admit, when I first thought about it, I thought Paul Hartley had scored the winning header, and then I remembered that I was, you know, as I typically do, conflagrating two different games in my mind. Samaras had conjured up his inner Paul Hartley, because that was a check. That was 2007 that Hartley had scored his header in Moscow. But
out with our scope for this evening.
go back, you know, to kind of linking that back to the Ibrox game I mentioned before, when Samaras, really kind of came of age as a Celtic player. I thought, like Robert said, I thought he was brilliant for us in those Champions League games. You know, he gave us an out ball that we typically hadn't had. You know, that sort of mad run that he would do. I have this vision of him kind of getting the ball in the halfway line and setting off with his hair streaming behind him and his shirt, you know, running about 50 yards
you've already referred to his goal at Ibrox, which was straight out of that description when he got onto Joe Ledley's pass and ran half the field.
Do you know, my memory of that Ibrox goal, which relates to your description there, Alan, was I remember after the game, at Ibrox in that game, Lennon being asked why he decided to play Samaras, and he said that he had spoken to Strachan, and the Strachan had said, just get the ball to Samaras and let him open his legs. and that's why I loved Samaras. I mean, used to joke about Samaras winning the Player of the Year award in Celtic Underground and stuff like that, but the reason I loved Samaras was in European games, as you said, Alan, he was great for, we were under pressure, play the ball out to him. He was an intelligent player for a couple of reasons. One, because he would run with it. Two, see if he knew we needed a foul, he would win a foul. He would get the ball 10, 20 yards into their half when we'd been under pressure, get a foul so that we could just move the whole team up the pitch. And then I don't think I've ever seen a player who was better at taking the ball into the corner flag and wasting time than Samaras in a tight game.
He's never been replaced. I think, you know, somebody in round about this period of 2012 when Samaras was having a particularly good spell, somebody, it was either in the Herald or the Scotsman, wrote and described Samaras and said, you know, he can be the world's greatest player and the world's biggest buffoon all in the same move.
The other reason I remember that game fondly is we live in Asia, and so we're 7 or 8 hours ahead. So we used to get together in someone's office and watch the games on Celtic TV and replay it at 7 a.m. You know, so not, you know, all go on airplane mode and then go in and sort of watch as live. And so, you know, we watched that game, and as you can, so by the time it gets to the end of it, it's 8:45, and everyone, the rest of the office, is arriving for work, and we were just going absolutely mental as Samaras scored. But the thing I remember is I said at that point, well, in the immediate aftermath, I have to go back for the Barcelona game. Like, I have to go. It was the moment at which I decided to go back. Which probably leads us into another game that we should discuss.
Yeah, I'm going to set the scene. So that group, I mean, think of the quality of that group. Benfica, Spartak Moscow, who, as you pointed out, Robert, had spent £12 million signing Aidan McGeady off us. So they were signing players that we couldn't afford to keep. Benfica, Spartak Moscow, Barcelona and Celtic. We have our 125th anniversary coincides with the Barcelona game. We have that tremendous TIFO organised by the Green Brigade, paid for by someone we know. And who wants to talk about it?
Well, I had it on my list. And Alan, you were at the match, so I'm sure it's definitely on your list.
Well, yeah, I mean, as always, Robert will give you the match report better than I can. I just remember I was in an unusual part of the ground for me as well. I was in the north stand, but right down sort of at the Celtic end. But I've never really sat down there before, so I don't have any chronological memory, but I just remember the two goals going in, because when Wanyama scored, I was pretty much on a line when he headed the ball. On a line, you know, from where he headed it straight into the net. So, like, as soon as it left his head, I was basically, you know, off my seat going mental. And I think, if anything, I remember that goal more than I remember. I just couldn't actually, because in between Spartak and that game, we'd gone over there, right, and we'd get beaten not too badly. We'd beaten 2-1.
Yeah, we'd gone ahead with Samaras over there. And if you remember, Kelvin Wilson and Ambrose and Fraser Foster had a brilliant game. I mean, the thing I remember about Ambrose in the new camp was his leap from a standing start. He was heading balls away when he was standing still and leaping up. And they'd made it 2-1 in the 94th minute. They'd won the game in the 94th minute to be utterly gutted, so proud of the performance. So, yeah, we'd actually shown we could compete with them just a couple of weeks earlier.
Well, we had, but I think, in my, you know, typically Scottish pessimistic brain, I think I sort of thought they would really react to that. So I think, when Wanyama's goal went in, I couldn't believe it even more, I think, than when it came to the second goal. Because, of course, the second goal was right in front of us, because, we were down at that end. And, I remember the ball coming through, and it was Xavi, I think, when he sort of did that weird thing when he sort of kind of half stuck his leg out behind him to try and get it. And it went straight past him, and, Tony Watt wrote himself into Celtic history for all time. And you know, I remember, you know, just seeing how pissed off the Barcelona players and Messi in particular were. And you know, when they scored again, I just sort of thought, oh well, you know, here we go. So we've managed to conjure up, you know, another disaster from the joys of victory. But yeah, it was just unbelievable. And you know, I've got a real soft spot for Barcelona. And you know, when you look at the team sheet of the team they had that night, it was the most unbelievable time. So yeah, it was just one of those nights. It was a spoiler alert. I mean, it has to be, I think, my most iconic Celtic moment of the decade. It was just amazing. Where did you watch it, Robert?
I watched it in our mutual friend's office in Hong Kong at 7 o'clock in the morning, as live. And we had a very strange time. So we were we're watching it in Celtic TV, and we were chit-chatting a little bit and not really listening to the commentary at all. And when Tony Watt scored and it flashed up as 2-0, we realised we'd put the second half on first rather than the first half. And we watched 40 minutes of the second half not knowing that Celtic were a goal up, you know, thinking it was 0-0. And there was a lot of disbelief. I mean, there was disbelief that Tony Watt had scored, and there was even more disbelief that we'd screwed up our watching and that we were already winning 1-0 at the time. So we then watched the first half in a totally relaxed frame of mind after knowing what the final score was. But yeah, I think a disappointment for me was that Tony Watt never really made it. And he looked as if he had all the attributes. You know, he was a physical specimen, amazing pace. Remember, he nearly got through for another goal. He got pulled down by Mascherano in another breakaway. And Tony Watt, he could finish as well. So I have to say, I really thought that season that he was going to become one of the great strikers for the club. And, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't happen. But, I mean, the atmosphere, I think, you know, people who were there that night say the atmosphere is certainly one of the greatest they've ever known at Parkhead. And a lot of the Barcelona players thought that as well. And they've gone public. And, you know, for that team at that time, you know, the team of Messi, Iniesta, Xavi, Busquets, all of David Villa, they're all at their peak. And, you know, they won the Champions League about three times around that period. So it was a phenomenal victory. I thought it was a much more satisfying victory than the one against Manchester United a few years earlier. But, yeah, you couldn't possibly leave this one off the list.
No, I remember a bit like you, Alan, when Messi, because it was, there's never been a Champions League game I can think of that hasn't had 4 minutes of injury time, and Messi scored in the 91st minute, and I remember the first thought that went through my head was, well, if you told me we could get 2-2 against Barcelona at home, I'd have taken it, because I just thought, they'll just go up the park, they'll be on such a high, we'll be on such a down, then after keeping them out for so long, that you know, I was just expecting that it would go to 2-1. So it was just amazing that we managed to keep it there. And then obviously we qualified out of the group stages in that group that I just talked about. And the thing about it, getting back to Lennon, the other thing I was trying to find quickly, the team, I've not got the exact team, but from memory, one of the things I do remember is that Adam Matthews played at left back that night because Messi was on the Barcelona's right but always cut in. So it was actually so that we had a full back who then followed Messi inside. So it was a well planned out game by
Lennon. And Mido was at centre forward.
That's right, yeah.
I remember how tight they played. I remember always being told that, you know, when you're playing football against a team that's much better than you, you know, you're always getting told that, you know, two lines of four, just keep it really tight. And I remember sort of watching it, we were incredibly narrow. You know, the fullbacks were barely outside the 18-yard box lines. And, you know, you're sort of looking at this, I was looking at this at the start thinking, you know, we're going to get absolutely ripped apart here. But yeah, it was I think to me it was first, you know, one of many, many cases where Lennon has, you know, shown the lazy lie that Neil Lennon's not good at tactics, you know?
Yeah. So, Robert, what would be your next game?
I've kind of leapt forward a bit to the defeat by Rangers on the penalty shootout in April 2016 as the catalyst for, you know, the departure of Ronnie Dyla. I mean, it's never nice to lose to Rangers, and I think that one was a sore one to take at Hampden. We had not really turned up. I think it transpired afterwards that a couple of our players, Brown, Beaton, possibly Stefan Johansson, were not fully fit, but he played them anyway. We were desperately poor, but frankly, could still have won the match because Griffiths cracked one off the underside of the bar in the last minute, which bounced down on the line, hit Fotheringham, hit the post. We could easily have won that game despite a poor performance. But I remember walking out the stadium thinking, you know, the performance was so limp that there was no way that Ronnie could continue. I think it was widely reported afterwards that the Celtic board were not happy in the aftermatch, you know, in the bar afterwards at the triumphalism of the Rangers directors. And, you know, I think it forced Dermot Desmond, Peter Lawwell to, you know, consider, you know, a significant upgrade in the calibre of manager that would be required to take us forward. I thought standards had slipped quite badly in the two seasons under Ronnie Dyla. And it was still, you know, almost unbelievable when Rodgers signed on to take the job, when he turned up at Parkhead, 15,000 fans there. I mean, and it was on the eve of a cup final when Rangers were playing Hibs the next day, which of course they lost, which made it an even better weekend. But, you know, I thought, so I suppose you could call this the coming of Brendan Rodgers, but I think that defeat to Rangers was the catalyst that enabled us to get the checkbook out and get in somebody with, you know, the skills that Rodgers had as a coach and as a manager. And, you know, I think no matter what we all think about Brendan Rodgers today, because it's nearly 11 months since he deserted us, you know, I think he's got his place in the history of the club. He brought us, you know, a very dynamic style of football, you know, certainly for the first 18 months. He improved a number of players technically and tactically. He instilled the winning mentality into the team, and initially he signed some very good players. So I think for the Invincible season, you know, he goes down in history. I do think if for any reason we don't make the 10, I think he'll get quite a chunk of the blame for leaving. But it was certainly a euphoric moment when, for all Celtic fans, when Rodgers joined the club.
So we'll get on to the whole Rodgers thing in a second. Alan, have you got any memorable moments before we get on to the whole Rodgers period?
I've been totally knocked off my stride just by Rodgers' name being introduced to this conversation. I don't think we can put Brendan. I don't think I'm capable of putting the Brendan discussion on hold at the moment. Now, the only thing I will say is, funnily enough, like Robert, when I was trying to think of moments, I had all the moments we've discussed from 2011-12, and then, you know, two or three years, I didn't really have any moments, right? It was the two ends of the decade, yeah. You know, really, yeah, are the highlights. And I guess that is because the quality of opposition was poor, and we were winning relatively easily. You know, it was I was enjoying reading the front pages about Rangers more than I was enjoying the back pages about Celtic. But
the only thing in the intervening period that for me, and I don't think it's an event of the decade, but it's maybe on the fringes, is the handball that we didn't get against Inverness Cali Thistle in the cup semi-final, where the fourth of, or whatever, the when they used to have the linesman behind the goals as well, and he, Alan Murray's name, I think it was, who was 6 feet away from it. Were we 2-0 up at that point, or were we 1-0 up?
We were 1-0 up.
1-0 up against Inverness, 2 minutes before half-time. The ball's going in the back of the net. It's 5 feet from the official behind the goal, and he misses it. He doesn't see it. We would have had a penalty. They'd have been down to 10 men. We'd have gone on to win that. Ronnie Dyle might well have won a treble.
Yes, because it was Falkirk in the final.
Correct, and things might have been very, very different. Ronnie Dyle might have grown in confidence. The players might have bought more into him. Or maybe it wouldn't have happened, but he might not have left the following season and we wouldn't have got Brendan Rodgers. It's amazing how, for me, I say that handball is a... maybe it should be in the top 10. I don't think it's a top 10 event, but it's an event that shaped our decade as to whether that handball gets given or not.
I didn't think there was much memorable about the two Ronnie seasons. I mean, I should have said I enjoyed the first Old Firm meeting, or you can't really call it the Old Firm, but the first Celtic Rangers clash, you know, under Dyla, which we won 2-0, yeah, which was the League Cup semi of the year before, which we could have won 10-0 if we'd applied ourselves properly, but, you know, we took our foot off the gas and let them off with it. I just think, you know, Dyla was kind of heading in the same direction as Tony Mowbray, and I think maybe you could see by the number of loan signings that were being made by Dyla that, you know, maybe he wasn't being trusted enough with the checkbook. Stuart Armstrong turned out to be a good signing by him. Boyata was a good signing. But I just jotted down, I mean, who did, you know, Tonev, Wakaso, Tyler Blanket, Carlton Cole, Colin Kazim Richards. We were starting to sign donkeys.
Yeah.
A bit like some of the donkeys that Mowbray signed in the first transfer window of the decade. And that, to me, said, well, the board doesn't have any long-term confidence in this guy. We're not going to let him spend the money, but we'll, you know, we'll let him do six-month, 12-month deals. But it was a bit of a non-event because Rangers weren't in the league for Ronnie's two seasons. And, you know, we still won the league pretty comfortably in both years. And
so we have to get on to Brendan.
Absolutely.
You've touched on it. 15,000 people there for his arrival, opening the main stand at Celtic Park. Celtic fans criticise Celtic and their PR, but I know for a fact we deliberately planned that to happen on the Monday, so that if Rangers won the cup, it would take away all... It would stop the press in its tracks about talking about Rangers. It was deliberately... We could have had him earlier. It was deliberately planned for when it was... Or was it the Friday we signed him? Whenever it was deliberately planned for when it was to take everything off them. And it was just incredible that we had this English Premiership manager who'd almost, you know, two seasons earlier had almost won the Premiership with Liverpool. Bar a slip from Steven Gerrard, he would have won the Premiership with Liverpool, and we had him as manager, and we then had an invincible season. And I think I've said in the podcast before, I am less agitated by him. A year out from when he left, I knew he wanted to go. I knew what type of person he was. The most important person most important thing in Brendan Rodgers' life is Brendan Rodgers, head and shoulders above everything else. And so when a decent offer came in, he was going. So when he went, it wasn't a surprise because he'd nearly gone in the summer, and that's just who he was. So I'm a wee bit more pragmatic of, well, that's who he is, so just enjoy what you got from him. And then when he goes, because that's who he is. I know that's not...
I'm totally in agreement with you. I'm over it. I got over it pretty quickly, actually, for the same reasons that if he wanted to go, he should go. And I think he'd been a bit disruptive at times, and there was clearly problems with Dembele and Boyata, and there was a number of issues which had arisen. I think we were just very lucky that Neil Lennon was available to step in again on a temporary basis. But, you know, as I said, I mean, Rodgers won seven 7 trophies out of 7. I think he was a bit of a disaster in Europe. And, you know, he just did not have Lennon's pragmatism for playing matches in Europe. But 7 trophies out of 7. He gave us a lot of great football. And he gave us the Invincibles. And as I say, if we get to 10 in a row, I think, you know, Rodgers will probably be invited back for the celebration. But if we don't get 10 in a row, I think Rodgers is going to come out of it very badly.
So, Alan, we just talked about the gap between Rangers going bust and pretty much Brendan Rodgers in terms of events. And in Brendan Rodgers' first season, we have as defining moments Brendan Rodgers' first game, you know, Brendan Rodgers arriving, the invincible season, the treble, Tom Rogic's goal at the treble, even for an iconic Craig Gordon celebrations at Tom Rogic's goal at the treble.
The bolt of lightning.
the bolt of lightning. The just everything. So you've got some Brendan Rodgers stories as well, Alan. So talk us through some stuff.
Well, I'm not at all sanguine about Brendan Rodgers. I mean, I despise the man, and I'll never forgive him for his departure from Celtic. And the main reason for that is my views on Brendan Rodgers have never at any point in time coincided with Robert. So despite that glowing sort of description that Robert gave of Brendan's time at Celtic, in the entire time he was the manager, Robert was negative about him. But he thought we were rubbish in Europe. You know, he was. I mean, for a man that had supported Ronnie Dyla, Robert was curiously negative about Brendan. And I have to say, I bought it all. You know, I lapped it all up as Brendan wanted us to. I lapped up all the shite at the start about, you know, him and his family coming over to watch Celtic and all of that stuff. I loved the football he played, but at the time, I remember actually listening to this podcast and others, and you know, people were onto him a lot sooner than I was, and so, you know, like the scorned spouse that knows nothing about the affair until after it's happened, I was I'm truly, truly bitter and twisted about Brendan. But I'd just like to go off at a slight tangent, just on one thing, just before I give you a couple of Brendan anecdotes. Can we just be clear? Steven Gerrard didn't slip. Steven Gerrard failed to control a football, which if I had done it playing for the Hong Kong Football Club, I'd have got dogs abuse for. So Gerrard failed to control the ball, and as he bid to leap back into it, then lost control of his studs in the turf. So, that... I quite like Steven Gerrard for a while, but I do carry grudges. Look, Brendan, I just, you know, as I say, a few anecdotes. There's the famous Danny McGrain story, right? Which I think, you know, everyone knows. You know, Brendan telling that beautiful story about how when he came to the club, all the backroom staff, you know, came in to see them, and they, you know, he chatted to them all, and you know, has his first day, and it's all beautiful, and then somebody supposedly comes into him and says, oh, you know, Danny McGrain sitting outside and, you know, wants to see you. And, you know, Brendan tells this story. They told this story on stage, didn't he, with Danny in the crowd, of how Danny came in and he's wasn't changed in his kit, you know, was just in his normal clothes, and sort of said, you know, I just want to know, Brendan, if there's a place for me at Celtic, and, you know, I just wanted to know, which is all totally believable when you know Dan, you know, if you know Danny McGrain. But, and, you know, Rodgers tells this beautiful story about how he said, oh, you know, as long as I'm at Celtic, there's a place for you, Danny. You know, you're a Celtic legend. You know, I'm excited to be meeting you. And then, of course, it comes out later that that's all crap. That actually didn't happen. And when subsequently interviewed, Danny says, it's a bit weird, you know, I was sort of sitting there as he was telling this story thinking, you know, I don't remember that. And you know, I think that sort of summed him up. You know, also, a friend of mine worked in the Chelsea backroom staff when Rodgers was at Chelsea earlier in his career, and he said at the time, you know, he's a yeah, he's, you know, he's an all right, he's a decent enough guy. But he always said the thing he remembered being at the Chelsea training ground and you're talking to Brendan, and as soon as, you know, as anyone's gone past, anyone's come into the room, you know, Brendan's clocking them. And if it's anyone, any sort of big player, anyone who Brendan deems as higher up the food chain than you, then he's just gone like that. He would just, you know, make a beeline of Didier Drogba or somebody came in, you know, Brendan was right there. And and then, of course, is my final little anecdote, you know, which supposedly when, I think everyone knows, Leicester interviewed Benitez as well and Rodgers, right? And
yeah.
We heard from, you know, pretty much directly from Leicester that they liked both candidates. There was a mild, you know, preference for Benitez, but Benitez had, you know, made it very clear he'd a contract at Newcastle, and whatever happened, you know, he was gonna see that out and all the rest of it. And, you know, Brendan was basically on the phone to his secretary getting flights to Leicester booked. And you know, the way we heard it, that was quite a big swing factor. He was, you know, Brendan was immediately available, despite the fact, you know, it was a critical point in a critical season at the, you know, the club that he supposedly loved. So I'm not
we elected, we elected to take the money. You know, we got did. Compensated. We took the money. We could have kept him till the end of the season. But the Leicester rumours had been around for months.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about the Leicester rumours, and this is what, if you remember, I was on the Buy Them In podcast and created quite a stir, because there was an element of hearing, you know, the benefit when you do a podcast is you have people on who, through their life, as like you just mentioned there, Alan, you were one of the people who told me that thing about Leicester. I remember going on a podcast and repeating what you told me about Leicester actually slightly preferring Benitez over Brendan. Not much in it, but Brendan's ability to drop everything and join was the deciding factor. And you repeat that and people say, who told you that? Well, I'm not going to tell you who told me that. Well, you're talking shite then. Well, no. And the benefit of doing the podcast is over time, people make contact with you, and over time you realise this guy's telling the truth about who he knows, who he says he knows. So you get that. Also, we've had journalists on this podcast who then stayed in contact. And despite what people think of Scottish football journalists, actually, the good ones will not write a story unless they can corroborate it. And I've had occasions where journalists have dropped me a text and said, just to let you know, I cannot corroborate this for me to print it, but I know it's true because the one source I've got, but my editor won't let me run with it. And so I heard from all these different things, including something that I was then able to corroborate, which was, if you'd gone down in May of the previous season and looked at the Midlands press, they were all talking about the fact that Leicester wanted Brendan Rodgers as manager and had sounded out Brendan Rodgers as manager, but they then had a change of heart and decided to keep, I think it was Claude Puel was the manager, they decided to keep him. So in the previous May, if you looked in the Midlands press, they were saying that people within Leicester are saying they'd sounded out Brendan's agents about coming to Leicester and leaving Celtic, and he was positive to the idea. And then when I heard stuff about China, and obviously when then this, you know, I heard from somebody else about him trying to persuade Moussa Dembele to not take a move because he would take him with him to whatever club he was going to. And then Moussa Dembele says that this story, and Brendan says it's not true. It was just a case of adding two and two and two and two together and thinking he's definitely Ofsky. And so, but within all of that, within that period of him going, we had the 5-1 game at Ibrox with Lustig. There's two moments in that. The fact that we won 5-1 and then at Ibrox, and then there was Lustig's goal in that game. Do you know my only disappointment of the 5-1 game at Ibrox is that we didn't make it 7-1, because I think we could have.
I remember thinking that. Go on, Robert.
I had that game on my list. I think we were spoiled for great victories over Rangers. And, you know, when you're looking at your top 10 moments of the decade, you know, we could have picked four victories over Rangers during the Rodgers era. There was the 5-1 game at Parkhead, which was Rodgers' first Old Firm game when Moussa scored the perfect hat-trick.
Yeah.
And,
you know, and if you remember on that game, Griffiths, it was Moussa's first sort of big start. Griffiths was injured, and you're going to the game thinking, how are we going to get the goals? Because Griffiths isn't playing.
Exactly.
Well, can I just remind you all a bit of an unknown that game, though? The best part of that was when Joey Barton had just arrived, and an early interview said, Scott Brown isn't in my league. And you remember it for Moussa's first goal. Do you remember Brown winning a header, completely dominating Barton? And then, of course, 15 minutes in, we got the drop ball, which is one of my favourite moments of the decade, the Scott Brown, Joey Barton drop ball. But, you know, if ever there was a get it up you moment on a football pitch, that was it.
So there was that one, and then there was the 5-1 at Ibrox the same season, which Harry's just referred to. And then there was a 4-0 Scottish Cup semi the following season, followed a couple of weeks later by a 5-0 at Parkhead the day we won the 7th title, which was the policeman's hat. Another Michael Lustig moment, which will forever stay in the memory. So there was four victories, almost unprecedented, you know, in terms of how much we battered them. Of the four, the one I picked for my 10 was the win at Ibrox that you referred to. Firstly, because it was at in front of their mob, so that made it all the more satisfying. I think it was our biggest win at Ibrox for something like 125 years. Couple of moments from the game, never to be forgotten, was Jozo's tackle on Kenny Miller, which is the finest tackle I've ever seen from a Celtic player in any game. I've watched it hundreds of times. It was never a foul, even though, you know, Miller was upside down, you know, sort of coming down at a high rate of knots. Fantastic moment. And then Lustig's goal at the end, you know, his solo run from the halfway line and curls one in the corner, runs away to the crowd, jersey over his head. It was a great moment, you know, as was his policeman's hat moment after Forrest's goal in the 5-0 game. And, you know, I think Lustig finished on a high last year. You know, his header created the winning goal in the Scottish Cup final. I thought he played quite well, and certainly a lot better than Tolyan after Lennon came back and replaced Lord Rodgers. And but, you know, maybe he just didn't do enough to get another contract. And, you know, we're pretty long on right backs this season, that's for sure. So four great wins over Rangers in the Rodgers era. You could pick all of them for different reasons. But the one at Ibrox was extra special in my book.
Alan?
Yeah, I mean, not much to add to all of that, really. As I say, I think my personal favourite moment was the Joey Barton drop ball. But yeah, those the Lustig moments. I think Andy Halliday has to get a special mention in the review of those matches. It was just amazing. And then, of course, to get to the Scottish Cup final. I was back for that game as well. I was there with my dad, and I mean, for a long time, it was the last decent thing that Johnny Hayes had done in a football pitch, right? I think Hayes has done much better in the latter part of his Celtic career. But yeah, going behind in that game to Johnny Hayes wasn't how I'd written that in the script. But yeah, just that magic moment. And I think the difference, unlike, you know, go back to the previous comments, you know, when you're ahead against Barcelona and you expect to lose. I think that, you know, I think Brendan had created with a series of results that season, and Brendan had created a mentality where, you know, I didn't expect to lose, but it got awful tense. The moment when Roger went through and scored, just fantastic. And, you know, trebles have now become quite commonplace, right? But they, at that time, we hadn't won many of them in my lifetime. That was right up there as my one of my best moments, actually, was the the Rodgers moment.
I mean, we absolutely, I mean, there's two elements to that. There is the fact that we won the treble, and there is the Rodgers goal, and as you say, Robert with a bolt of lightning. I think what, for me, what made it, there's an element of the centenary season to it.
Yes.
You, in that, it's only after, it's only when you look back, you go, wow, it was in the 92nd minute.
Yeah.
Because at the game, as you say, Alan, you were up, I mean, we battered them in the second half. I don't know if they crossed the halfway line after the 48th minute. And we battered them. And you're just uptight from the perspective of, we're not scored yet. And then I think it's the nature of the pressure of getting the treble. It was a humid, dark, it was an odd day weather-wise. It was the nature of the goal with the nature of the run that he has, that he does it. And it's the fact that it's right at the almost the last kick of the game. It, all of those things combined to just make it such an incredible moment.
And was it that, the need Robert for chronology here, that was the weekend where we'd had the, it was the Lisbon Lions stuff, right?
So and the Hydro, yeah, we did the Hydro as well, which is one of my events of the decade.
Yeah, I put the Hydro very high on my list of, you know, most enjoyable Celtic moments of the decade. It was 2 days before, so it was on the anniversary of Lisbon.
Yeah.
It was just 2 days before the Rogic Cup final. And I thought the club did a fantastic job honouring the Lisbon Lions with a whole series of events over a week or so. And like you, Alan, I'd flown back for all these Lisbon events and the Scottish Cup final, and you know, of all the trips back I've done in the last 33 years to watch matches, that was the best trip. You know, it had absolutely everything. Well,
I think it was, wasn't it Wednesday night, the London dinner, which was absolutely fantastic. You know, a friend of ours has got a friend who's a director at Fulham, and you know, he said that, you know, Fulham couldn't get that many people to a dinner in London. I think it was 1,300 people or something, right? Simple Minds.
That was the Wednesday after.
I was after the cup final. Yeah, that was one where the guy went on stage as well, wasn't it? I wasn't there.
He was shouting from the floor. Yeah, yeah, that's right. So it was Hydro Cup final. There was other events in Glasgow that weekend. There was a lunch I went to. The Big Billy at the front signing books. And then the London event. So yeah, it was just a. Well, and of course the actual anniversary. You know, was very emotional seeing. Big Billy wasn't obviously in great shape by that time, and you know, seeing him and some of the other lines. I was at the hospitality thing at the cup final, and you know, Bobby Lennox was in there, and it was just absolutely magic seeing these guys 50 years on, and you know, and winning the treble. It was just like, yeah, everything aligned beautifully that weekend.
I thought the Hydro event itself, I mean, I think there was about 13,000 there that Thursday night. The atmosphere was fantastic. I thought the club put on a really good event. I mean, there was all sorts of, you know, we had Susan Boyle for a while. There was the Bay City Rollers. There was Rod Stewart. There was Rod Stewart's daughter singing Grace up on the stage. You know, at one point, I think we had Lennon, Rogers, Martin O'Neill, Strachan, and possibly Kenny Dalglish all up on the stage at the same time, doing a little Q&A. Alec Ferguson made a fantastic speech about how difficult it was to play against the Lisbon Lions in the late 60s, you know, when he was, you know, a top striker in Scotland. You know, the singing was memorable. I took 13 members of my family from Glasgow, including my sisters, who know very little about football. But, you know, they said it was just the time of their life. And, you know, euphoria just stayed with me for, you know, it hadn't even started to dissipate by the time the cup final came along on a Saturday. So it was just a brilliant night.
The outside of the Hydro in green, hadn't they? I remember, you know, I hadn't lived in Glasgow for quite a while at that point, and it seemed extraordinary that we'd been allowed to do that, right? It was just, I remember after all that euphoria coming out, and, you know, to go home, and the whole place was lit in green and white. It was just
I remember the bridge across the Clyde was in green. The Squinty, you know, it was just the Squinty Bridge was in green. Yeah, everything. Glasgow was green and white. I mean, that that night.
I mean, you can only imagine what Rangers are going to do when they eventually win a trophy. They win the best cup in 3 years' time.
So we've gone through that. I'm just conscious of time because I've just realised I have to go in about 5 minutes. So we need to then quickly pull together any other events of the decade after the first treble that you would quickly want to touch on. For me, I mean, there is an element of, oh, there's another treble. Winning a double treble, winning a treble are unique events. Brendan leaving is a pivotal moment in the 10. We've touched on Brendan, so that's that. Actually, could you put Celtic beating Hearts at Tynecastle in the first game after Brendan left under Neil Lennon in the 10? Because if we go on to do 10 in a row, Brendan leaving could have destroyed last season. The whole club could have fallen apart after Brendan left last season. And as you said earlier, Robert, Lennon coming in and winning that game at Tynecastle just kept us going. So, Alan, have you got any more moments in your 10 things that sum up the decade?
I don't think I have really. I mean, just on that, though, I mean, also the theatre aspect of Lennon at Tynecastle as well, you know, given all that had gone down with him at Tynecastle in the past, I wouldn't have thought that one, but it was a very special night. No, I didn't have another moment. One I was trying to make into a moment, but it's probably one for a different top 10, though, was just the role of Scott Brown throughout the period and how even in the, I mean, you know, arguably, as he's often done in his career, he's had a couple of dodgy games recently, but, you know, we've written Brown off so often and he's just been so absolutely consistent. He's been the most fantastic leader, credit to the club, you know, throughout all these games or, you know, that we've just spoken about, you know, he's been there. And, you know, like when you look back at the 60s and 70s, you think about all the things that, you know, Sean Fallon was there for and, you know, Big Billy was there for, and Brown, you know, is the figure of this era. So that's slightly off point, but was the only sort of other thing that I had on my list to try and squeeze in.
Robert, have you got any additional moments?
Yeah, I'm going to say last month's League Cup final win over Rangers at Hampden, which I flew back for. We were absolutely crap, as everybody knows. There's a couple of things, but it was one of the most satisfying of the 10 straight trophies that we've won. It was one of the most satisfying, just the manner in which, you know, we were outplayed, but we hung on, we ground out a result. I've been saying all season, I don't care about the Cups, I don't care about Europe, I just want to win the league. And that was my view right up until 5 minutes before kick-off against Rangers in the League Cup final. But I must say, the last 10-15 minutes is the most stressed I have ever been at a match if we were hanging on. It was a bit like the last 10 minutes in Boa Vista after Larsson scored.
Oh, and, God. You
know, it was absolute torture. The two guys sitting to my left got up and left with 15 minutes to go. They said, we can't take this anymore. And they just went down to where you get the pies and stuff like that. And just the tension was unbearable. And absolute elation at the end when the final whistle went. And it was a great, great win for us in what had been a terrible performance. And, you know, it's kept the run of trophies going, which I think is important.
Well, actually, I'm just thinking, Alan, you saying about Scott Brown, and can you really make that a moment of the decade? Well, you can, because the Bruni first happened in February.
In
Ibrox in February 2011. So that can't. So Scott Brown can be a moment of the decade in that game when he did it. Was it February
El Hadj Diouf
against El Hadj Diouf?
Oh yeah, when he curled it in with his wrong foot, right? He curled it in with his left foot.
Yeah, when was it? February 2011. I'm trying to remember the exact date, because did we not draw with Rangers 2-2? Was that not?
Yeah, it was 2-2. Then we won the replay. Mark Wilson scored. It was 2011.
Yeah, February 2011. Yeah, that's it.
So Lennon's first trophy It was against Motherwell. So we were already down to 10 men. Forster had been sent off in that game. And
82nd minute, Scott Brown. El Hajouf. So the Bruni there is. So actually, the Bruni, that makes it, we have pulled together 20 things between the three of us that sum up the 10. The 10 of the decade. I'm quite sure there will be somebody thinking there should be something else that we've not mentioned here. And as I say, without demeaning it, I mean, obviously winning a treble is an incredible event. So, you know, should the treble be in there? It just didn't have the iconicness of the single treble.
Yes. Yeah. Because it was invincible. That was the differentiating factor, I think. But I think the fact that we've turned Hampden into a fortress now, you referred to that Inverness Calais game and the Josh Meekings and handball and Ronnie Dyler could have had a treble. You know, Hampden was becoming a bit of a hoodoo for us under Neil Lennon the first time, and under Ronnie Dyler we lost a lot of semis, a couple of finals.
We lost to St Mirren in a semi under Lennon as well.
Lost one to Hearts, lost a final to Kilmarnock, yeah, unluckily. But we are absolutely, I don't know how many fixtures consecutively we've now won at Hampden, but we've won 7 finals and presumably 7 semi-finals, absent the one at Murrayfield. So we've really turned Hampden back to what it used to be.
Yeah, so hopefully the Scottish Cup final is the second last game of the season this season because the 2020. So as things stand, it might not be the case, but there's always the possibility that if we get things right in the second half of the season, and as I've said in a couple of podcasts ago, despite what people are thinking, we're on target. If we match in the last 18 games of the season what we've done the first 20 games of the season, we'll do 101 points this season, which there's only been the invincible season in 2001 where we have had 100 points or more in a season. So people are agitated because we lost the game against Rangers and because they have improved.
Yes.
But I don't necessarily think we've gone backwards. In fact, the stats show we haven't.
Yeah, we've won. If you'd said at the start of the season, you know, we'll play 38 games before the window and win 31 of them, you'd be pretty happy. You know, all the people, you know, who after the announcement of Lennon's role after the Hearts Cup final, there was a lot of people who were a bit disappointed that Lennon got the job. But, you know, 31 wins out of 38 this season is phenomenal. It's just that we ended on a bit of a downer.
Yeah,
but you know, if Christie had scored with a penalty, I think it would have been a different game.
If Christie had scored with a penalty, if either of Julian's headers that were cleared off the line had just gone 6 inches higher and gone in the back of the net.
Yeah, so I think we played better in that game than we did in the League Cup final, which, you know, we really carried.
With hindsight,
in that game,
at the game, I was agitated because we were playing badly. With hindsight, I now look back in that game and say we played badly. Lennon got the system wrong and it was a 50-50 game.
Yeah.
I'm starting to, maybe it's the positive Celtic, it's a positive fan in me that I'm looking at it that way, but the stats show possession was 50-50. I left the game saying the second half nothing happened. Stats show it was 50-50. In fact, expected goals I think was 3-1 Celtic because we had the two cleared off the line and missed a penalty. I think if we can get things right in the transfer window, you know, we've signed 2 players. We've got Morgan. I tell you what, brilliant job we've managed to do getting Morgan and Henry out the door.
We made him a centre forward for this, right?
If we can, I wouldn't be surprised if in the last week of the window we get a couple of experienced players in on loan. I think that's what we're aiming at. You know, we'd sign 2 21-year-olds. And then, as I say, I wouldn't be surprised if we brought in a couple of experienced guys. Yeah. If we can get it right and we win the league, quadruple treble sounds nice. Anyway,
just before 10.
Not half.
I need to go. So with that, Robert, and it will be getting late for you guys there in the Far East. So with that, I'll say, Robert and Alan, thanks very much.
Thanks, Harry.
All the best.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. So there you have our review of the last decade, the Celtic decade, 2010 to 2019. A decade of complete dominance by us, a decade where our biggest rivals went bust. They started up, the fans of that started up a new club, and all that happened in between with a treble, 10 trophies in a row, etc. So you saw that when we tried to have a list of 10 events, games, whatever, that summarised the last 10 years, we came up with 20 between the three of us. So what we're looking for is, if you can vote in, you can email podcasts@celticunderground.net. That's podcasts, plural, @celticunderground.net. You can stick a list on Twitter to @HarryBradyCU or @CelticRumours. You can also stick it on the Facebook page, my Harry Brady Facebook page, wherever you want, stick the stuff on, and we will then, from that list of things, you can come up with stuff, you don't need to do what we did today, we will create our top 10 list of the 10 events, games, etc. that summarised the last decade of Celtic. That was me with Robert and Alan, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight. Through the years, never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.